Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, cultural enrichment, and all-inclusive fares. Discover more at Viking.com.
Ukrainian forces seek to roll back Russian gains as Moscow shifts its military strategy. Plus, inflation gets a starring role ahead of November's U.S. midterm elections.
The last time we had inflation this high was 4 decades ago. So this is something unique in the modern American historical experience.
And President Biden plans to propose a major tax overhaul aimed at the wealthiest Americans. It's Monday, March 28th. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. Ukrainian forces say they have driven Russian troops out of a town in the northeast of the country as Kyiv seeks to take advantage of a decision by Moscow to focus its efforts on controlling a swath of territory in the south and east. Meanwhile, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has stepped up his pleas for Western military support, saying over the weekend that despite his requesting additional tanks, planes, and missile defense systems, Ukraine's partners had sent the country equipment that was, quote, covered with dust at their storage facilities. Turkey says Russian and Ukrainian negotiators are expected to hold their next face-to-face meeting in Istanbul. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan's office said in a tweet that during a phone call on Sunday, he had urged Russian President Vladimir Putin to accept a ceasefire and peace between Russia and Ukraine. President Biden will propose a new minimum tax on households worth more than $100 million as a part of his annual budget due to be released today, the White House says. WSJ Markets reporter Anna Hertenstein says the proposal is the latest attempt to tax the wealthiest Americans, though it employs a novel approach by creating a whole new separate tax structure aimed at capturing rising asset values.
It would actually mark a pretty significant change in how income is defined for tax purposes, as well as capital gains. So the way it typically works now is that capital gains are taxed when the thing that saw a rise in value is sold. But this is proposing to tax assets as if they were sold each year, even if they aren't.
If enacted, the measure would likely face legal challenges to its constitutionality under the 16th Amendment. Shanghai has announced new COVID-19 pandemic restrictions, which are likely to disrupt commercial activity well beyond the Chinese city's limits. The restrictions will affect 25 million people. Local authorities said on Sunday they plan to lock down the city in two phases over the next week and a half in an attempt to control an outbreak of the Omicron variant. Sources say that Tesla is suspending production at its car plant in Shanghai for 4 days. A Tesla spokeswoman said today that the company is implementing COVID-19 control requirements and is making work arrangements according to the government's policies. And the film Coda has won Best Picture at last night's Academy Awards, though the evening was defined by the moment when Will Smith, who went on to win Best Actor moments later, smacked comedian Chris Rock on stage for a joke he made about the actor's wife, Jada Pinkett Smith. Coda won in all three categories it competed in, including Supporting Actor and Adapted Screenplay. WSJ Entertainment reporter John Jurgensen says that with the Coda win, Apple TV Plus becomes the first ever streaming service to win Hollywood's most prestigious award.
So if we needed yet another reminder of how important streaming entertainment has become and how the power dynamic has shifted around it, this was a big one. So even though Netflix really kind of paved the way in the way that streamers are recognized in this prestige race, it was Apple, relative newcomer to the race, that managed to take home the top prize.
Dow Jones & Co., publisher of The Wall Street Journal, has a commercial agreement to supply news through Apple services. The IPO market seems to have cooled off, or as WSJ reporter Corey Driebusch says, it's frozen over, with just 22 companies having gone public this year so far, compared to 79 by this time last year. And Corey joins us now with a look at why this is and what might be different about public offerings once this current freeze thaws over. Hey, Corey.
Hi there, Luke.
What happened? When and why did the IPO frenzy stop?
Yes. Yeah, so we have seen record numbers of companies going public starting in about summer 2020 and then all the way through most of last year. And that was record numbers of companies going public, raising record amounts of money. And then last fall, something happened. In November, you'll probably remember there was some talk about interest rate increases, and investors started to really let that sink in. And a lot of them were selling high growth tech companies or just high growth companies that maybe don't have profits now, but were promising a lot of growth in the future. And what a lot of those companies have in common is many of them were recent IPOs. So by the end of last year, I believe it was about two-thirds of all companies that went public in 2021 were trading below their IPO price.
You report that bankers have been using this time to rethink the criteria for which companies should go public. How exactly is their thinking changing?
It's not that bankers don't want everyone to go public, because of course they do. But they're also realistic that when there is a lull like we're seeing right now, it's important that the first companies who go public after such a lull perform well. So bankers are right now trying to think about what kind of companies are going to give us the best chance of having success in the early phases of reopening the IPO market. And what's become very clear is the companies, even from last year that went public, that are holding up the best are ones that have profits and also ones that are a bit larger.
Okay, so it sounds like bankers are being a little cagey about when the IPO freeze could break. But what is your reporting telling you, and what signs should we be looking for that could give this away?
Yeah, so of course, no one wants to give an exact time because no one wants to be wrong. But right now, what I'm hearing is, if all this volatility dies down, and granted, there's a lot of volatility, but there's some hope from bankers and lawyers and companies that I spoke with that maybe in May, we could see some companies go public and some big companies, and they could do well. And that would be a great thing. But what's probably going to clear the path for that is companies doing quote unquote follow-on offerings. That's basically when already public companies decide we're going to sell additional stock in the open market. And they do kind of what we call a mini IPO roadshow to do that. So what folks have told me is if we start seeing follow-on offerings and those deals do well, that should pave the way for IPOs.
That was WSJ reporter Corey Driebusch, who covers IPOs for us. Thanks, Corey.
Thanks, Luke.
Coming up, a new journal survey finds that inflation is getting a starring role in TV ads from Republican members of Congress ahead of November's midterm elections. How are voters reacting? We'll have that story after the break.
This message is brought to you by Nuveen. Nuveen has provided investment excellence for 125 years. A lot has changed, but one thing that remains constant, including the different types of durable income and portfolios, can help investors meet their goals. With expertise across income and alternatives, Nuveen continues to expand its capabilities while maintaining its legacy as a leading investment manager. Visit Nuveen.com to learn more. Investing involves risk. Loss of principal is possible.
Inflation. It's quickly becoming a top political issue as the 2022 midterm election campaign season heats up. With Democrats on Capitol Hill holding onto a narrow majority, could this be the issue that decides the race? WSJ national political reporter John McCormick was in Phoenix, Arizona recently, which has been dubbed America's number one inflation hotspot. Consumer prices there are rising more steeply than anywhere else in the U.S., and here's what people told him.
We do want to buy a new car at some point, but now the prices have just gone through the roof and it's just not prudent to buy right now as far as I'm concerned.
We would like to consider having a third child, but we're putting it off because of how expensive daycare is and because we need a bigger house and housing prices are just so expensive.
It's from our iced tea vendors to our linen suppliers to our food goods, produce, beef, seafood. Everything is going up. Nothing is escaping the inflation rate.
And John joins us now with more on this story. Hi, John. Welcome.
Hey, thank you.
So from the small sample we just heard there, it seems like inflation could be becoming a big issue, at least for some voters.
I think it'll be an important issue. I don't think it's going to be the deciding issue for a lot of voters, but it's something that's sort of making them generally grumpy and unhappy. There's plenty of things, obviously, to be unhappy about in the world right now, and this is one of them, but it's something that's sort of in their face day in and day out. And so, yeah, we went to a battleground area in suburban Phoenix. It's a precinct that was like 50-50 politically. It's also a new congressional district that's evenly divided, and it's in a state that had one of the narrowest outcomes in the presidential election. So we just thought it'd be a good place to talk to voters about how they're feeling.
And as it's so obvious in the conversations you had with people, when you talk to them, inflation isn't just about sticker shock. It's affecting some people in profound ways, delaying major purchases, and even life milestones.
In the neighborhood that we focused in for the journal story down in Arizona, that's a middle class to upper middle class neighborhood. And we went there because it was such an even 50-50 place politically. It was an interesting place to talk to people. But this issue resonates even more with lower income folks. And the Black and Hispanic voters are especially feeling this. And that's traditional Democratic base. And if they're feeling this more, that's also not a good thing for Democrats. We did a recent journal poll sort of looking at how people were feeling about inflation. And there was some evidence in that poll that non-white voters are moving towards Republicans in sort of what we call the generic ballot test, where we say, are you going to vote for a Democrat or a Republican for Congress? There was some movement there. And there's certainly reason to think that this economic stress that they are feeling is pushing them in that direction.
Yeah, and it seems like politicians are taking note of this grumpiness among voters. A journal analysis has shown that 1 in 8 television ads in congressional races that air between January 1st and March 20th featured inflation as a topic. What is the message of these ads? Is it mostly about policy or more of an emotional appeal?
Both parties are mentioning it some in their television ads, but we're seeing it a lot more in the Republican spots. It is something that Americans are not very used to. I mean, the last time we had inflation this high was 4 decades ago. So this is something unique in the modern American historical experience. And so people are obviously feeling it in their day-to-day lives. And the Republicans are, in their messaging, they're saying, hey, Joe Biden and the Democrats have been sort of anti-fossil fuel. They've been too pro-green energy. They've wanted to turn off pipelines. And so therefore, that is why the price of gas is rising. There's maybe some truth to that. There's obviously many complicating factors when it comes to global energy supply, and certainly the war in Ukraine has been the most recent dramatic factor in that. And Biden and the Democrats are increasingly pointing to the war and trying to use that as their explanation for inflation. It doesn't work super well because inflation was really on the rise much of the past year and has just been sort of exacerbated by the situation in Ukraine. But the other thing that Republicans are saying in their messaging is that there's been too much federal spending, that there was too much COVID relief, too much incentive for people not to work, and that has driven prices higher. But political advertising is not a place where you get a lot of policy answers and weighty suggestions for how to fix things. It tends to play off people's emotions more. And that's what we're seeing in a lot of these ads. There's one that just started running very recently down in Georgia, criticizing Senator Warnock, the incumbent Democrat down there. And the woman, she's pictured at the gas station. She's talking to her husband, I think, on the phone and says, hey, I'm going to fill up. She fills up. Her gas bill is $80. And she's just shocked. And she tells her husband, that's Biden and Warnock's fault. So it's trying to play off those emotions and sort of direct people's anger towards the incumbents and oftentimes the Democrats, at least so far.
That was WSJ national political reporter John McCormick. John, thank you so much for bringing us this story.
Thank you.
And finally, you may have noticed at last night's Oscars that the reboot of Dune, which was nominated for Best Picture, is just called Dune, the same as its 1984 cult classic original. And it's not the only franchise reboot to not even bother with a name change. So why are film titles sounding the same? WSJ contributor Chris Cornelis says with Hollywood more in love with franchises than ever, studios are trying to keep sequels, prequels, and even requels sounding fresh.
We've come a long way from Superman 2 and Rocky 5 Having a movie come out called Scream 5 might signal to somebody who's 16, 17, 18 years old that maybe hasn't watched the first four Scream movies, oh, that's some old thing, that's something, I don't know, I haven't seen the first four movies, why am I going to see the fifth one? Now, calling it Scream, they get two bites at the apple. The people who love the franchise know about it. On the other hand, somebody who hasn't seen the first four, they're like, okay, I'll go see this thriller, this horror movie that looks fun, and there's hope that it'll introduce those viewers to the new film and the sequels that are coming next.
And that's What's News for Monday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with the Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.